Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga from Cleveland.com. Joined by Paul Hoynes, the Cleveland Indians beat writer. Paul, good to talk to you again. Games don't mean much of anything right now. The stats don't mean much, but Jason Kipnis is really having himself an outstanding start to spring training.
Oh, man, you can say that again, Joe. Six home runs in seven games. You know, the big thing is he's come to camp healthy. You know, his shoulder, right shoulder is solid. His hamstring is healed. He's come to camp with, you know, a good frame of mind. I think he's come to camp with a chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove to everyone, including himself, that last season, you know, went off the rails because he wasn't healthy, and he's proved that. He looks great. Six home runs in seven games. You know, the last time I saw, you know, a guy like this kind of home run performance was Albert Bell in, I think, 1992 when he hit 11 home runs in spring training when they trained in Tucson. So, you know, Jason's still got a long way to go in spring training. Who knows? Maybe he'll catch Albert.
Last night, the Indians lost to the Chicago Cubs 11-6 in exhibition game, a night game at Goodyear Ballpark. In that game, Yan Gomes had the big home run for the Indians, a grand slam, tied the ball game up at 5-5. The competition that's not really a competition between Roberto Perez and Yan Gomes there for the catching duties, you know, is anybody pulling ahead? Is anybody making a case for getting the majority of playing time there?
You know, I think, Joe, they've each caught about a fair amount of the same number of games. Offensively, you know, Perez has had a decent spring. Gomes has had a decent spring. I think it's probably dead even, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way, you know, it ends up in camp. Although it seems like, you know, judging by the postseason last year, you know, Perez was the hotter, you know, the hotter catcher and the guy they wanted, you know, to catch in the postseason. You know, Francona has said it's never going to be a situation where one guy catches twice a week and the other guy catches five times a week. It's going to be pretty much split like it has been. You know, Gomes has always been, kind of the number one catcher, at least going into last year. You know, Francona said that in spring training. I think it's evened out a little bit. I think they like Perez's offensive potential. You know, both of them are not, I don't think they're ever going to be, you know, like, you know, it's not like we're talking about Johnny Bench offensively. Both are, you know, great defensive players, and I think they're just trying to get the best out of both of them. And, you know, they've said that, you know, that either catcher can handle, you know, anybody on the staff, so it's not like, you know, one catcher has to catch this guy. I think they want to keep Bauer and Perez together. I mean, last night that wasn't the case. I mean, right?
Right, yeah, Gomes started the game, and – Bauer, it looked like Bauer was working fine with him until that he went out there for that fourth inning and things just sort of fell apart.
Yeah, I mean, Bauer was, looked to me like just watching on TV that Bauer was up in the strike zone the whole night. I mean, he couldn't get anything down, and, you know, the Cubs just kind of wailed away on him.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the folks on TV were speculating if they were working on that or doing that on purpose, pitching up in the zone on purpose. And I'm just shaking my head going, when do you ever pitch up in the zone on purpose? That didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, I mean, we don't know Bauer, though, so maybe that was Bauer's plan, but I think he was up the whole night, so I don't think that was the plan. He didn't look like he threw many curveballs at all, so maybe he's just working on his fastball. And the Cubs were the last team he faced them a couple years ago in Goodyear, and that's when they hit like three home runs against them in a row. The next day, Francona brought a cop in with the three baseballs, and he said, you know, these balls landed on the road behind the ballpark and caused a traffic jam, and there's some upset people, and they were just kind of, getting riven Bauer, so he took it in stride. But that's what that game reminded me of.
Well, that last home run that he gave up, I still don't think it's landed. I mean, that was an absolute bomb to left field. So, but this is the time for him to be working on things like that, and it could have been worse. In the first inning, he had a runner on third base, and Francisco Lindor makes a diving play, throws a guy out at first with a bounce throw. What do you make of Lindor's defense? Early on, is he looking like he's, ready to go right now?
Yeah, definitely. That was a great play. He robbed Tommy LaStella with a stop in the hole, saved a run. The big thing, that it reminded me so much of a Vizquel. It's one thing to make a diving stop, but it's another thing to get up fast enough, to bounce back up fast enough and make an accurate throw to get the guy at first. And, that's what Lindor did last night, and it wasn't like he dove toward second base. He dove toward the hole, so that made the play even more impressive.
And earlier in the inning, there was a play at the plate where the batter hit the ball into the alley in the gap, and Bradley Zimmer, used his speed, used his legs to get over and cut the ball off. And I said, as we're sitting here watching it, I said, Zimmer made that play with his legs as much as Lindor made it with the throw to the plate.
Yeah, it was a nice play for this early camp. Hustle by Zimmer and a great relay to the plate by Lindor. And, that's the kind of defense, we saw all last year. And I think that's why Zimmer is so important to this club. Even if he doesn't hit, even if he's, if it takes him, we still don't know what kind of hitter he's going to be, but he gives you so much defense, so much speed, so much arm in center field that it's really impressive to watch. And I think that makes him worth the price of admission right there.
These ballparks that they play in, Goodyear Ballpark is no different than these spring training ballparks. They have these wide open sort of outfields and big gaps and deep alleys. The hitters might not necessarily like it, but they've got the advantage of the dry air for the ball to be able to jump and travel there. But the pitchers got to love pitching in some of these minor league parks or these spring training parks.
Yeah, I think they can track them down, but the ball jumps so much out there, Joe. It is a hitter's paradise, and they play, in the afternoon games, and usually there's no clouds. It's a high sky, and you see guys fighting the sun all the time. So when you come out of spring training as an outfielder, you're ready for the regular season. You're ready for night games at least, and you're not going to lose too many games in the sun because, you've really got your work in out there, because that is a tough place to play the outfield.
Tonight against the LA Dodgers at Goodyear Ballpark, Josh Tomlin takes the mound. Interesting development over the week here, as Terry Francona said that Mike Clevinger is going to have a spot in the rotation. So that takes care of four, leaving Josh Tomlin and Ryan Merritt basically competing for that fifth spot. What do you need to see out of Josh Tomlin and Ryan Merritt in the next couple of starts for each of them to sort of make their case?
Judging from what Francona said, listening to his press conference, You know, I think Tomlin is the guy. You know, if Tomlin makes it through the camp healthy, I think he'll be the fifth starter. You know, Tito said there's not a whole lot of competition in the rotation, for the rotation spots. Now, that leaves Merritt kind of out in the cold, I think. He's out of options. It's really going to be interesting to see what they do. Do they go with an eight-man bullpen? If they do, I think Merritt's got a chance to stay. If they go with a seven-man bullpen, maybe he's got a chance. But, you know, the guy is out of options. You know, Tito has said they don't want to lose him. You know, he's really a valuable insurance, you know, an insurance piece for the rotation. But I don't know. Sometimes you just run out of room. And you know, outside of a trade or outside of an injury, you know, one of those convenient spring training injuries, you can put him on the DL. I don't know what happens. So, you know, it's going to bear some watching. But I just got the impression from listening to a Francona that this is, you know, that the fifth spot is Tomlin's basically to lose.
You mentioned in a post you had earlier in the week, Lonnie Chisenhall, and, you know, the potential that this could be his last go-around with the Indians and his sort of way that he's attacking this season. If this is his last in Cleveland, you know, what his goals are and what to accomplish.
Yeah, you know, I've always been, you know, kind of fascinated with Chisenhall, just the way, you know, his career has evolved. I mean, I think this is going to be his 11th season in Cleveland. He was the number one pick in 2008. You know, he came up as this kind of, you know, the Indians version of Evan Longoria. You know, he was going to be, a home run hitting third baseman. He came up, he had a great swing, great natural swing. It didn't work out. He got sent back down. He got sent back up. You know, a couple times they gave him the job outright in spring training. Other times, you know, they brought in guys to compete with him, like Jack Hanahan, and Hanahan ends up beating him out for the third base job. You know, and as you know, recently as 2015, him and Jose Ramirez get sent down to Columbus, you know, in June, and you're thinking, well, this is the last. Ramirez has a chance to be back, but Chisenhall, I didn't know. I thought maybe, you know, this is it. Maybe this guy just needs a change of scenery. He comes back and he's no longer the third baseman. He's the right fielder, and now, you know, he's changed his swing. He's kind of just opened himself up. He, you know, he's willing to do anything. He can play all three outfield positions. He's played some first base. Francona even said he could play shortstop if they really needed him. So, you know, this is a guy that's adjusted, and he's stuck around, you know, and in this environment, you know, that's a pretty good thing. He's making almost $6 million a year, and, you know, he's found a home here, and now, you know, this is his last year, and I think, you know, more than anything, he'd like to go out with the Indians winning the World Series. I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, obviously that's a long shot, but, you know, it just shows you how, you know, players evolve. Some of them, you know, go one way, some of them go the other way. I think, you know, Chisenhall has evolved the right way.
Well, what do you think he fetches as a potential free agent when in this day and age we talk about, you know, the versatile players being more valuable, the guys who can play infield and outfield, give you more than one position, and, you know, hit for average, hit for power. Lonnie Chisenhall, if he doesn't suffer through as many injuries as he did last year, he puts up career numbers in every category if he plays the season healthy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the key, you know, if he's a free agent next year, he hasn't outpriced himself, you know. The market is open to you know, those kind of utility guys, you know, like a Zobrist, the guy that can play all over the place. So, I mean, I think he's helped himself in the long run, and, you know, he's still affordable. It's not like he's making $12 or $15 million a year. He doesn't have that price tag on him, and he can keep playing, you know, and I think that's the goal. He's only 29, you know, I think he'll play, you know, so he's only 29 years old. So, I mean, this guy could play for a while, and his versatility is going to help him.
That's it. We're going to start calling him the poor man's Ben Zobrist, and and he's on the right side of 30. So there he goes. He's playing this year for his next contract. Michael Brantley cleared to start taking some at bats in simulated games and B games. Is the latest I'm hearing.
Well, he had four at bats yesterday in kind of a sim game, you know, where you know, Napoli, him, Brandon Barnes, Tyler Naquin, you know, needed some at bats. So you know, they were, you know, they got to you know, they were facing live pitching. Brantley at least wasn't running to first base. I think he's swinging the bat. The only thing he's not doing is running, you know, and he's, you know, in, you know, individual outfield drills, he's moving to his left and his right on taking ground balls and ground balls right at him. And, you know, listening to, Chris Antonetti on, Wednesday's broadcast or Tuesday's broadcast on STO, it sounds like they're pretty optimistic that if he's not ready for opening day, he should be ready just around there. Now, I don't think there's any concrete timetable, but I think he's made some progress, and they're encouraged that, you know, this guy, you know, if, you know, he might be ready, he could be ready, hopefully, maybe by the home opener, by the time, you know, the Indians come back from that first road trip.
Well, you know, speaking of the lineup breaking camp, and you know, we saw Terry Francona put together a lineup that might look something like what an opening day lineup could look like for these guys for last night's game against the Cubs. You know, no spring training game is more important than any other spring training game, but this one sort of had a feel like Francona was managing it, or was at least putting the lineup together in a way that it did. Lindor leading off, Kipnis, Ramirez, Encarnacion, and then two lefties back-to-back. Alonso
and Chisenhall.
Alonso and Chisenhall, and then Gomes, Zimmer, and Upton. And that Upton spot, you know, depending on Brantley or Rajay Davis, you know, those are options there. But that looks pretty much like what these guys are going to look like this year, right?
Yeah, that could be an opening day lineup, depending, you know, what kind of pitcher, if they're facing a lefty or righty in Seattle. But, you know, I know, you know, the key to me right there is Lindor hitting leadoff. You know, I think, you know, Francona really likes him there in that spot. The guy hit, you know, what, 33 home runs last year. He didn't hit them all out of the leadoff spot, but, you know, I think he hit like maybe 14. You know, he's a switch hitter. He gives you speed. He can go first to third. He can steal a base. And what Francona was saying in his press conference yesterday is that when the bottom of the lineup, you know, if somebody gets on in the bottom of the lineup and, you know, brings the top of the lineup to the plate, you've got Lindor, a switch hitter with pop that can drive those guys in. And he really likes him in that situation.
All right. Yeah, and to me, I think Lindor's a guy, he's a kid who's got years down the road where his days of being a three hitter or a, you know, I guess you put your three hitter as your switch hitter as your best guy. But,
yeah.
You know, I think his days of being a three hitter are ahead of him, you know, down the road. Whereas right now he's still got that speed and still got that ability to run the bases the way he does that, you know, you like him there in that leadoff spot.
I mean, you could basically hit him anywhere in the top four spots, I think. And, you know, usually your best hitter is your third hitter, a switch hitter. You know, I know, Carlos Baerga, it was in that spot. And, you know, Brantley, when he's healthy, he usually hits in the third spot. So, you know, I would think it would be interesting to see what Francona does if when Brantley comes back and where he hits him. But, you know, Brantley is always hitting that third spot. So I would think he'd stay there. So that's going to be an interesting development to watch. But I know Lindor likes hitting leadoff. You know, I think he likes, you know, just starting the game and being in that situation. And, you know, Francona was saying yesterday that when you get an impactful player like that, one of your best players like that, hitting in a spot where he likes, well, you know, you just kind of let him do it.
Where do you drop Jose Ramirez to if when Michael Brantley comes back, and obviously you're not batting him in the ninth spot.
Yeah, I know. That's really a good question. You know,
it's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and you could, you know, for a long time last year, a bulk of the season, you know, Jose hit fifth behind Encarnacion and gave him a lot of protection, as much protection as Bruce did. And, you know, then when they got Jay Bruce, they moved Jose up into the third spot. And, you know, he had an all-star season, an MVP-type season, no matter where he hit. So I think third or fifth is a great spot for those for Jose.
All right. Well, you know, we're looking again at Josh Tomlin against the Dodgers tonight. Corey Kluber scheduled to go tomorrow. The pitching staff starting to come around and be, you know, where this is the time of spring training maybe where guys are hitting a little bit of a rough patch. The hitters are starting to catch up. We've seen, you know, Bauer. We saw Tomlin in his last outing get roughed up a little bit. Kluber's the only one who's really looked sort of immune to that sort of thing, but you know, is anything that we should take from the starters, you know, last few outings?
I don't think so. I mean, I think now, you know, the regulars are starting to play a little longer. You know, instead of three innings, they're playing four, five, and six innings. So, you know, pitchers are starting to face the better hitters, especially the starters are facing the better hitters two and three times now. So, you know, that may play a role in it. And I think sometimes you just hit a period of spring training where, you know, the hitters just maybe have a little dead arm or just a little gas. You know, these guys have been there since mid-February. Probably all of them have been throwing since the middle of January. So I think you just kind of take it in increments. I think the biggest part is just building your pitch count up until you're ready to throw 90 to 100 pitches by the time spring training ends, like you're ready to go six, seven, eight innings. And, you know, that's the key right now.
All right. We saw Bauer go 60 pitches last night. So, and he's sort of the anomaly of the staff with in terms of his workload. And, his, you know, he's a guy who you can go out there and let him out there for 120 pitches in the start.
Yeah, I mean, I think he feels he could throw nine innings, you know, like the first day of spring training. I mean, that's the way he trains in the off season. He's ready for that. So I don't know if he, you know, that wouldn't be the smartest thing to do, but I'm sure he'd like to try it.
Okay, the last thing we'll cover is that sort of last spot in the bullpen. You mentioned he doesn't know if Francona is going to go with a seven or an eight man bullpen, but there's room for at least one veteran arm to make it in there. These guys who are in camp on the non-roster invitees, minor league contracts. Matt Belisle has had a couple of good outings. Torres has looked pretty decent. And anybody else squeezing their way into that sort of consideration, or is it between those guys?
You know, I know. You know. Belisle, Torres, you know, they both just signed minor league deals, major league veteran guys. Francona mentioned Evan Marshall, who pitched, you know, has pitched with Arizona, pitched with Seattle last year, you know, got hit in the head by the line drive in 2015. Serious incident, but he's recovered now. I think, you know, Jeff Beliveau is another guy that's kind of, you know, has had a decent spring. The thing that jumped out to me yesterday was he was talking about Zach McAllister, you know, and obviously he's a familiar name and he's been in the Indians bullpen for, you know, three, 4 years now, but he said he's in a really good spot. And he was talking about how are they going to replace Shaw? And he was saying, this is Francona was saying, well, you know, we don't have to do it with one guy. Maybe we can do it with one or two or three guys, and then he brought McAllister's name up. So that was a surprise. That was interesting to me. He said he just has thrown real well. He threw well last night again, you know, and he's always, you know, you think of McAllister, you think of a one-pitch pitcher, a fastball. So, you know, he's you know, kind of built for that for one inning, and he looks like he's working on some secondary pitches. So that's a name to remember.
If McAllister ever got a fastball that that sort of moved a little bit more movement in his fastball, I think that would really make him a lot more effective. And not that he's not doing the job now. It's just, you know, he could be a 8-9 strikeout per nine inning kind of guy if he ever, you know, had that movement on his fastball.
Well, yeah, he's always wanted to be a starter, and I think that's always been in the back of his mind. He moved from the rotation to the bullpen. And, Francona said yesterday he probably could start for 25 other teams, but right now he's not starting here. So he's not starting in Cleveland, so, the bullpen is the best spot for him. And, they think, they pitched him, they've stretched him out. He's pitched like two innings and one and two-third innings. So, I think they're doing that for a reason. And I think that's just the guy that, I guess that's Tito's pick to click maybe this spring.
Alexei Agando, anything from him that you've seen so far in spring that indicate maybe he has a chance to make the roster?
He just throws a lot of strikes, Joe, from what I've seen of him on TV. He doesn't miss. He just kind of – he's still got a big arm. Still throws hard. This is another guy that would like to start. He started in Korea last year. He's kind of bounced back and forth his whole career, especially in Texas. He bounced from the bullpen to the rotation, and I think that kind of probably screwed him up a little bit, led to some arm problems. But, this is another guy, a veteran guy that maybe they can convince to, stay in camp or if they have to make a cut, when they cut down to the 25, or maybe he'll go to Columbus for a while, that they'll keep him in reserve, because he looks like that's a big arm to let go if he's just going to walk away. And all these guys on minor league deals, all these veteran guys have out clauses, so maybe that's something they can negotiate.
Right, they have like a certain date in camp if they haven't made the club or whatever, they can ask for their release and go to a different team, correct?
Right. And yeah. And some of them, I think, there's a deal where if you pay them $100,000, they can go, you can, they'll stay on in the organization, they'll go down, but there's a date like June 10th where if they're not on the big league roster, then they're free agents.
That might work. All right. Again, we're less than 30 days away from, the home opener for sure, but we're getting much closer to the start of the season here. Paul, are we anything else excited or anything changing, or is this how we're supposed to be? We're in a good spot right now, right?
Yeah, no major injuries, and I think I was listening to Antonetti the other day on TV, and I think that's what all GMs, of contenders, good teams, they're sitting here, second week of March, and they know the team they've got. They know who their 25 guys are going to be. They know they're going to be a good team. And all they're just – and they know all these guys have to play and get in shape. But deep in their heart, they're sitting, let's just get through without anybody getting hurt. Let's, nobody blow out a rotator cuff, nobody blow out a knee, nobody, pull a hamstring. And they just want to get their 25 guys from point A to point B to the start of the season. And they all know that somebody always gets hurt in spring training. So, I think that's why general managers get old in a hurry.
All right. Well, we will continue next week as we get closer to the Indians breaking camp. Upcoming is the big baseball weekend in Vegas, where the Indians and Cubs will play each other again. And beyond that, we will talk to you again in the coming weeks.
Good deal, Joe. Thanks, man.
All right. Hey, can we just for my own sanity, can we just re-record the intro real quick? I'm just going to reintroduce the thing and throw to you, and we'll just mention Jason Kipnis once, because I don't know if that first segment recorded or not. So
okay,
I'm just going to, it should take 2 seconds. So.